Welcome to the Happiness First Radio Show, where you learn to consciously create the life you want. Your host, Lorraine Gordon, an expert in law of attraction and present moment awareness, along with her expert guests, give you the tools you need to focus your attention and thoughts to create your best life. And now, here's your host, Lorraine Gordon.
Hello and welcome to Your Happiness Way Radio. You're listening to Lorraine Gordon. I'm your online coach, and I am dedicated to helping you create a happier and more satisfying life. A life filled with love and success and the material goodies and the health that you want. And I want to thank you for tuning in. I know how valuable your time is, and I know how many different directions you are being pulled into, and I appreciate you spending it with me and the expert guests that I bring you every week. And today, I'm really excited to be bringing you a show about addiction and addictive personalities, and in a way that you may really relate to, because even if you don't think you're addicted because you don't have a problem with alcohol or drugs or food, you know, the obvious types of addictions, you may find something in this show that will help you with things like codependency, which can be addicting. You can feel addicted to the approval of others, and that truly is an addiction. So I think just by listening, we will be able to bring you some helpful information, information that will help you to lead a happier, freer life. And if this in no way pertains to you, we all know someone that could benefit from the material that we're going to bring you today. We're also going to talk to you a bit about depression, particularly the depression so many of us feel around the holidays. And often that's because of our expectations not being met, the feeling that everyone else is having a high old time, but you're not. And it's supposed to be a specific way, but it's not that way. And often, many of us can develop a deep loneliness that comes especially around the holidays. And I know personally, I dealt with that myself around my birthday. So sometimes, I don't any longer because I've worked on it and I was aware of it, but sometimes those early disappointments in life are so deeply embedded that unless we work on ourselves, we can be affected our entire lives. And you might be saying to yourself, well, gee, I'm not an addictive personality. I just like chocolate. It's just a habit. So what's the difference between a habit and addiction? Now, a dictionary definition of addiction goes something like this. Addiction is habitual, psychological, or physiologic dependence on a substance or a practice that is beyond voluntary control. Withdrawal has many meanings, one of which is a psychological and or physical syndrome caused by the abrupt cessation of the use of a drug in a habituated person. A habit is done by choice. The person with the habit can choose to stop and will subsequently stop successfully if they want to. The psychological, physical component is not an issue as it is with an addiction. And you'll quickly notice when you're trying to stop a habit, if it's turned into an addiction, by the degree of difficulty you may have in quitting. But enough about my take on addiction, because today we have an expert guest. His name is Warren Broad, and he is a clinical hypnotherapist, a life coach, and an addiction specialist. He is now a retired fireman, and he began his counseling career as a group home worker working with displaced youth and foster children. Warren is also the creator of the Recovery in the Now program. It's a coaching and support program for those suffering with addictions and compulsions. And Warren recently co-authored in the number one Amazon bestseller, It's the Landing That Counts. and he is right here in the studio. Warren?
Yes, Lauren, thank you so much for that great introduction.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest. I think, you know, this is really a perfect time of year for you to bring your knowledge and your expertise to the audience. What did you think about my intro in terms of what my take on addiction is? In line with your thinking?
Well, definitely, and it really is a very multifaceted issue. The one thing that I would add into that is a big part of addiction treatment programs that we've kind of added to the dictionary definition is that any compulsive behavior or addiction is often termed that way when an individual continues to repeat a behavior despite the consequences of that behavior. So, for example, if it's gambling or if it was something like food, where the individual, to use the example of food, the individual continues to binge, continues to eat, they're gaining weight, they're now obese, perhaps they also have diabetes or some kind of physical issue going on, but the behavior continues despite the consequences. Mm. And that's, I feel, a very important part that a lot of the general population doesn't necessarily pay attention to or understand, that within addictions and compulsive behaviors, what we see is we see individuals really going past their moral values or past what would be considered sort of sane behavior, mm-hmm. because this addiction or compulsive behavior is drawing them past the part of their mind that would say, well, don't do this because you're going to lose your job, or don't do this because your health is failing.
Such as the really great person who finds themselves stealing from their family, stealing money to go out and buy whatever they need to satisfy that addiction. And you hear Absolutely. About that all the time.
Yeah, it's a very common thing. Most addictions that especially if they're chemical addictions, are not cheap, and right. and they that is the one side of a lot of chemical addictions where individuals start bending their morality. They start bending their morals to feed the addiction.
It's a pretty horrible feeling. So, what is the difference between compulsive behavior, habit, and addiction? Now, I know that's a loaded question because there's a lot of that's a lot of information I'm asking you to bring up.
Well, something that the real difference, let's say, between a chemical addiction, and it really, you're right, Lorraine, that there are so many fields now within addictions and compulsions. There are starting with what the general population is, it's easy for them to understand, is there are certain drugs like cocaine or painkillers, opiates, things of that kind, that actually have a physical addiction, mm. being that once an individual has been using that chemical for a period of time, if they try to stop, the body goes into physical withdrawal, being, mm-hmm. Fevers, sweats, vomiting, things of that kind. The body actually requires this chemical, it feels that it requires that chemical to continue to function.
Right, right.
So when you pull somebody off a hardcore chemical of that kind, they go into substantial withdrawal, and if it's not monitored, it can result in death.
Can it really?
Well, absolutely.
You know, this brings something to mind. My husband has severe back problems, and he went in for major surgery, and they loaded him up with so many drugs. And you know, we were sort of ignorant when it comes to chemical dependency, and I really wasn't. Maybe I wasn't ignorant about it, but I wasn't paying enough attention to him when he said, I'm stopping all these drugs. And he stopped them, just stopped them, cold turkey. Neither one of us thought anything about it other than the fact that he was very brave to go through the pain, because he found that his mind was more affected at that point and it wasn't really alleviating any pain. That night, and for the next couple of nights, this man went through physical hell. And of course, I contacted the doctor and he said, you're not supposed to stop that way. We didn't realize that he was thrashing and sweating and truly had a physical addiction. However, emotionally, he didn't, and he was able to stop taking the painkillers.
That's great. The reality is that with observation, most people will get through withdrawal without dying.
Luckily that happened for us.
It's basically a severe, a very severe flu.
Horrible.
For general, between 24 to, depending on the amount that the individual was taking, it can be between one in three, 1 in 4 days.
Mm-hmm. We had about 3 days of it. Yeah, it was pretty bad. Mm-hmm.
Just about the worst flu that you could ever really live through, because the body is, one thing that's very difficult for individuals with painkillers and opiates and heroin and falls into that, is that the body has essentially forgotten how to function what general levels of pain are like, because those drugs, opiates, really anesthetize the part of the brain that understands what pain is. And then when they begin to come off it, they've been in a place where they haven't been able to feel pain for so long that when normal aches and pains come back, they can't put them in any kind of reference point, and small pain feels like very large pain.
Interesting. That's so interesting. And I'm sure, as was the case with my husband, the drugs stopped helping with the pain, and they only interfered with his thinking faculties, and he had to quit because he wanted to function. He had, he's got a business to run.
Right.
So I have so much to ask you about this, such as the responsibility of the medical community. They are getting so many people hooked on drugs today.
And I don't believe really that it's an intentional hooking of people, but
no, I didn't mean that. Yeah.
There are conspiracy theories out there as far as who's benefiting from all of this. The important thing that I think the general population needs to be made more and more aware of, and we are seeing a change from where we were 5 to 10 years ago to where we are now, there is more and more attention being paid to what forms of pain management are going to be given to different types of patients. So a lot of the patients that used to receive opiates now don't.
Oh, that's good to know. That's good to know.
And that's really just because it's become more and more mainstream. There's, whether it's talk shows or whatever else, that have really given some focus to this, of individuals who just went in for knee surgery, let's say, and then come out 6 months or 3 to 6 months later, and they're addicted to opiates because of the amount. Often it's the amount that was prescribed in the beginning that dictates how easy or not it is to come off afterwards. And they're not really given any training on how to taper. And this is an important thing. Your husband did, grinned and bared it.
Yeah,
but there really is a way to taper painkillers off so that the body doesn't go through such a severe transition.
Yeah, it was horrible. So you were talking about the difference between a chemical addiction versus other types of addictions and compulsive behaviors versus habits.
Right. So the next thing in there, if we were going to talk about categories, would be, there are addictions that are cognitively addictive, being even things as basic as something like marijuana. A lot of people don't necessarily think marijuana is an addictive substance, but anything that has an effect on brain function and changes brain function is something, especially if it's a pleasurable one, is something that we can become addicted to. And so there's a bit of a, let's say with something like marijuana, there's really two things going on there. There is a lot of nicotine in marijuana when it's smoked.
I did not know that. I don't think people realize that, because so many say,
right,
well, it's not going to hurt me. But obviously nicotine does hurt us.
It does hurt, yeah. what I do believe in, and there's a bit of a gray area here, is that marijuana has been shown to be very effective in treating forms of cancer, and if it's being used in a holistic way, that I really don't have any major issues with. But when it, as a recreational drug, and once it goes beyond being a recreational drug, if somebody has developed a mental dependency on this, whether it's marijuana or something similar, and now is starting to act and do things that, going back to our definition, that are outside of their morality or outside of their values, then we're looking at an addiction, because now they're starting to do things that they wouldn't have done in under regular conditions. So there's a lot of chemicals that fall into that area of that can become an addiction, but aren't necessarily chemically addictive.
Well, what about sugar? Isn't sugar actually somewhat chemically addictive?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Lorraine, you hit the nail on the head with that one, and there may be some people that may disagree a little bit with me, but what they don't necessarily know is that all complex drugs are sugars.
They are.
I didn't know that.
But they're not fattening, necessarily.
They're not fattening in that way. But all, you know, THC, for example, which is the active ingredient in marijuana, is a complex sugar.
Gosh.
Cocaine is a complex sugar.
Wow.
It's not sugar in the way that we think about putting it in our cookies,
right. But
it is a sugar. And it has this way of affecting brain function, is that when, especially for certain individuals, certain people, when they eat a highly frosted cupcake, they get high.
I relate to that because I know that without question that I have I can easily go into sugar addiction. So I would probably say I am addicted to sugar. And if I don't stay away from it, I can have a little bit, and that can throw me into 3 days of eating sweets until I force myself to stop. And not only is it difficult to stop and fattening, but I get irritable when I'm eating sugar. I'm a little snappish.
Yeah. There are major brain areas of the brain that are affected by these sugars.
Wow.
And for example, when I'm working with individuals that have eating disorders, where this now has become a compulsive behavior and has actually become an addiction in their life, what they are feeling and what is going on cognitively is a real cycle, where many binge eaters generally binge eat at the same time each day. So there's kind of a 24-hour cycle happening there, that as the sugar comes in and then as it works its way out. And then what this does cognitively of the irritability that you're talking about, the high that they go through when things are good, it is really no different than any other substance out there when it's being used in that way.
Isn't that interesting? And so, you know, we were going to talk about addiction in the holidays, but if you're addicted to sugar, I mean, let's say you're not depressed, you're happy as could be, and all of a sudden there are cookies everywhere. And for many, it starts at Halloween because of the candy.
Right.
And there they go. And they're off until January on this major sugar binge.
Absolutely. And there's usually quite a downfall come the, you know, mid to the end of January into February when those sort of sweet holidays have passed.
Yeah, thank goodness for it. So we've talked about chemical addictions going the gamut from drugs all the way to sugar, to marijuana and sugar, from hard drugs such as cocaine and heroin and other opiates to sweet things like grandma's cookies. I mean, you know, something so innocuous, something so heartwarming as going to someone's house and they offer you, you know, something delicious and sweet to eat. Innocent sugar. Not so innocent.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So tell us then about the difference between that and a habit.
Okay, well, a habit is something that has developed. They say generally in addiction studies that to create a long-standing habit takes about 1 month. So this is why treatment programs, traditional treatment programs, are generally 28 days, mm-hmm. because it is felt within that community that either whether you're looking to break an addiction or, in what we're talking about, start an addiction, anything that has existed for about a month on a daily basis can become a habit. Now, the longer that lasts, once you go past the 1 month and two and three and four, the neural pathways embed themselves deeper and deeper. But habits are generally something that starts out in our lives where, for whatever reason, we just got into a pattern, generally over about a 1 month period, where something was happening either, let's say, on a daily basis. But, for example, I mean, let's say just even with alcoholics, this is often how binge drinking starts, is that Friday nights become
Thursday nights, right.
Yeah,
Thursday is the beginning of the weekend, and it goes through Sunday, and then it starts at Wednesday or something like that, right?
Yeah, because habits generally, one of the things, even in, I know this is part of your world, even in law of attraction that we talk about, is, you know, we get more of what we pay attention to. So when you're really paying attention quite regularly to, if Friday night was your blow off steam night, when that's something that's being paid attention to on a high level, it begins to grow. Because nothing in our minds and nothing in life is stagnant. Things are either growing or they're decreasing. And addiction and habits are the same in that they don't generally... I will often raise an eyebrow at anyone that would say to me, well, you know, I've managed to keep this thing as Friday nights only for 10 years now, and that makes me not an addict. Well, that's not necessarily the case. It just means that you've been very rigid in keeping it to a certain time. But what happens if we try to take that away? And this is how we can often know if there's the difference between a habit or a full-blown addiction.
Well, this is an interesting concept, though. So wouldn't we say, though, you know, you talk about alcoholics or even drug addicts that are functioning well in society. But they are addicted. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's a newer term. Functional addict is a newer term in the world of addictions and compulsions. And you know, there are many, and the numbers are probably quite staggering if they were able to look at it statistically, of people who are addicted. If you take something away, if you took away their habit or their chemical or whatever they're using, you'd realize there wasn't an addiction there. Functional addiction generally just means that an individual hasn't gone far enough into the behavior for it to begin having major consequences.
Oh, so in other words, they're only functioning if it's an addiction to something like, you know, a hardcore drug. The functioning could stop at any moment.
Yeah, well, and I mean, there are many functional alcoholics out there that can, you know, can hold off and not drink until after 5 or after mm-hmm. 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they're not an alcoholic.
Right.
It just means that they're able to go to work. They're able to, perhaps they've kept their family together. And but if you were to take it away, you'd have somebody that was very, very uncomfortable.
Wow, that's so interesting. How prevalent are most of us? I mean, how prone are most of us to addictions?
Well, that there's a lot of study on that. That's a pretty loaded question, mm-hmm. but it is understood that we are products of our environment, and generally individuals who have come from an addictive environment are, well, there is something like 70% more inclined to grow their own addictions because they've grown up in an environment that was commonplace, and they the mind will always go to what it knows. So if it has modeled and seen a mother and a father who have addictions, or even if they're in that functional addict category, it now seems okay. It now seems okay to the child or the young adult that, well, mom or dad did this on a daily basis, so why can't I?
So it's like anything else. If there's a lot of yelling and screaming in the household, that person will grow up and possibly be a yeller and a screamer. If they see someone taking tranquilizers regularly, then they grow up and think that's okay. And many of us think it's maybe not so okay, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Lauren. And, you know, one other thing there is there is a lot of study that they're attempting to do on whether there is a genetic model in addiction. And this is still a gray area. There are some fields of study that basically have said, yes, there is, and we're going to go with that. There are other fields of study that have said, no, we don't have any like real conclusive proof that genetically this can be passed on. It really, in the big picture, as far as treatment goes, it really doesn't matter.
It doesn't. So it's not more difficult for the person that has a genetic predisposition toward it than a person who doesn't?
Not in my experience. No. In treating many, many addicts over the time that I've been working in the field, whether they came from parents that and grandparents that, let's say it's alcohol that drank, it's not any harder for them than it is somebody who picked it up at some other point in their life. The process of recovery is recovery. It's equally challenging. Some of the conditioning can be a little different. It might be actually more difficult for someone that has an entire family of drinkers to break the bonds, because often they are then
social.
Also having...
Sure.
Sorry?
It's the social situation. They're always in the family, and there's always drinking. So that definitely would make it more difficult, I would think.
Yeah, it is. It is more difficult for somebody like that to have to go back to their family and say, I'm not going to drink, to someone who comes from a family where it's not all that important.
You know, I want to talk to you about sexual addiction, too, in just a little while. But first, I want to mention that you are giving away a free meditation download that has to do with an empowered mindset meditation. And you are a hypnotist, so I'm assuming that this meditation is hypnotic, correct?
Yes, it is hypnotic in nature, so don't drive a car while you're listening to this empowered meditation.
Thank you for that.
This would fall into self-hypnosis, even though individuals will be listening to my voice. The amount of trance that they achieve will really be up to them.
They engage in the meditation itself, that type of thing. You know, for everyone listening, you can get this wonderful meditation on the site that you are listening to the show. So if it's Blog Talk or iTunes, wherever you're listening, there will be a link to get this free meditation to help you empower your mind for whatever situation. And I think addiction would just be one of those things. Am I correct in that, Warren?
Very true, Lauren. I created this really as a mindset meditation for anyone that's just looking to feel more empowered in what they're looking to achieve. It doesn't matter what it is. And some of they don't even have to have an exact goal. It's really just about creating that nice feeling that comes from feeling when you are excited about the changes or the direction that you're taking your life.
Mm-hmm. Often it's the first step that can be the most difficult. And once you take that, everything else can come easier. And perhaps this meditation may be just what all of you need to take a first step in any direction that you may find daunting right now. So I urge you to take a look at this and pick it up. It is free, and all you have to do is click on the link that will say Lorraine's free radio show gifts, and you'll be able to get Warren's Empowered Mindset Meditation. Warren, I want to come back and talk to you about, right after our commercial break, talk to you about addiction and depression during the holidays. But right now, we just have to take a moment for my sponsors.
Have you ever imagined a life without worries, fears, and problems? What if I told you that you no longer had to live like that? Changes are possible for you through my teachings and affirmations, CDs, DVDs, and apps. Through our book, Peace in the Present Moment, Eckhart Tolle, Byron Katie, and I can show you how living in the present moment will change your life. Visit my website, peaceinthepresentmoment.net, and get inspired on my Facebook page of over 73,000 likes.
At LOAAffirmations.com, bringing you the very best in audio affirmations programs, and introducing our newest title, I Am Happy, Healthy, and Wealthy. All of the LOAAffirmations.com programs are MP3 instant downloads and come with multiple audio and subliminal tracks. Order yours today at LOAAffirmations.com.
Back again with Warren Broad and Lorraine Gordon, and today we're talking about addiction and depression, specifically during the holidays. Warren, how severe is the increase in addiction and depression this time of year?
It really is significant, Lorraine. The amount of alcohol, the amount of Christmas parties and things of this kind during the holidays really puts a lot of pressure. It puts a lot of pressure on individuals who are early in recovery. So, for example, if they decided last January that this was going to be the year that they broke their addiction, coming into December and the parties and the everything that is attached to the holiday season puts an inordinate amount of pressure on those that are early in recovery. So often they are put to the test, sometimes the breaking point, where they just aren't able to make it through.
Wow, and you're talking about a year later, aren't you, as being early?
Oh yeah. Well, the recovery is year one is you're still considered like an infant.
Wow. I wasn't aware of that.
Right. If depending on the length of your addiction, it 1 year compared to most of the individuals that have to break an addiction, what they often say, for example, in 12-step, is that you are in the early stages of recovery, so you're essentially at the beginning of recovery for about half the time of your total addiction. So if you had your total addiction for 20 years, the first 10 years of recovery are what is required really to start breaking through to the other side.
Gosh, who knew? So is that why, you know, you hear so much about people in the industry, these kids, you know, and they get off of whatever they've been addicted to, and a couple of months later they're right back in rehab. That is so sad to me.
It is. Well, and what I see a lot, especially in Hollywood and within those that have reached any kind of celebrity status, is they unfortunately don't take themselves out of the environment for long enough.
Right.
Whether it's pressure that I don't know exactly why, but whether it's pressure that comes from their agents or from the industry itself to say, hey, it's been 6 months, you know, you can come back in now. It's not enough time for those that are truly seeking any kind of long-term recovery. You'll often see that they make much longer a break from TV, film, music, whatever it is, or that they've really decreased their social presence, so that they're not putting themselves. I say this to my clients all the time: is you can't go back into the lion's den for a really long time and expect to survive, because if it's like just throwing anyone. You can't throw an alcoholic back in a bar 3 months later, or even 6 months later for that matter, because there's just too many associations. The mind is a byproduct of its associations. So when you put these people right back into the same lifestyle, the same people, you can't expect real change to occur.
Yeah, and how much harder is it for just regular folks then around the holidays, where they're just thrown into these social situations and they've just quit sugar or alcohol and it's everywhere? What kind of advice would you give to people, you know, around this time? I mean, just don't go to the parties. What do you do?
That is a big part of it, Lorraine, is it's always a hard thing to discuss with my clients, and it's a hard pill to swallow for many of them. But generally, especially in year one, you can't go. You just have to make up. You have to make up excuses. You have to make up, you know, or really, really limit the exposure. So if they have, if it's a work party and they're going to lose their job if they don't go, well, then you've got to go. But my suggestion to somebody like that would be, you're going, but you're going for 1 hour,
right?
And that's, you know, and that is it. And get your butt out of there as quickly as possible.
Oof.
Make the appearance, shake the boss's hand, and get out.
You know, how many situations do you see like that, where the person gets through the party and maybe they only stay for an hour and they get home and they're so relieved that they did that they have to have a little drink to celebrate? Woo! You know, I did it. That seems to me to be, that could be a great possibility.
It is a possibility for some. There's one of the biggest challenges in recovery, and this is whether it's an addiction or a compulsive behavior, is the sense of reward. Is often alcohol is a reward, or food is a reward, or sex is a reward. And what individuals really need to learn is how to reward themselves without their drug of choice, or without their behavior of choice. Is if they get out of that party and they want to reward themselves, they have to reward themselves with something that wasn't part of their addiction.
Yeah, you know, you hear about this so often for specifically women that are addicted to food, and they say go get a massage or get a manicure. But a lot of people don't love getting massages or manicures. And let's say they already buy everything they want. What would you suggest to that type of person?
Well, some of it is a rewiring, Lorraine. Is, you know, I would say for any woman that says, well, it's, you know, a massage or a manicure isn't the same as my glass of white wine. A lot of it is retraining yourself to look at what is true in all of this. Is it's true that for somebody that's battling an actual addiction, they have to understand that glass of wine doesn't stay as one glass of wine, and that it initiates a whole sequence of generally shame and guilt.
Now we get into depression.
Yes. Going and getting a massage or a manicure or buying yourself some flowers or something like that does not initiate this sequence of shame and guilt. And
so the way I see it, and the shame and guilt, the sequence, would require more alcohol to dull the pain of the shame and guilt, and then it's a never-ending circle.
Absolutely. That is the pattern of all addictions and compulsive behaviors. Is there's a term they use in 12-step, is one is too many and 1,000 is never enough.
And how alone do people feel when they're in that cycle, as if no one else feels it but them?
It is the most lonely place that really, I believe, in mental health, there is really nothing darker than the loneliness and the sadness that comes from long-term addictions or compulsive behaviors.
That makes me sad just to think about it. So this time of the year, it's really tough. I mean, there are so many people out there that their addictions began originally because of disappointments in life, and that was sort of the pushing off point. And that's worse than at any other time. And so everything kind of falls in on them.
It definitely can feel that way. And what I really encourage individuals to do around this holiday period is to connect. I really do believe that nobody, very few at least, individuals out there have no resources available to them. It's important to pull on your resources, whether there's one member of your family that isn't a drinker, or if there's friends that are trying to achieve the same thing. It's to get out of the loneliness. To get out of the loneliness, it's extremely important for individuals to pull on their resources, support groups, friends, healthy family. Whatever they can, they need to make use of it. Because see, and we were talking about how this depression comes in, is the media is feeding us an image that is so far from reality.
Right. We think our life isn't living up to what it's supposed to be. It's not all sparkly and shiny the way we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, whether it's TV, movies, whatever it is, I understand that some of the intent is genuine, but the byproduct it gives to a lot of people is that they look at their lives and then they look at this show that they just watched on TV and they draw this comparison of, oh, well, here I am and here they are, and look at the big gap in between. But it's so important to readdress that one is fake and one is not.
So true. And I deal with that, of course, with my coaching clients all the time, with law of attraction. So much of it is our unrealistic expectations of what is supposed to be versus really appreciating what is. You know, Warren, I want to also mention that you're offering something really valuable to anyone out there who's listening, who's having a problem. Warren is offering a free recovery breakthrough session for anyone that's looking to break through depression or anxiety or any type of addictions and compulsions. And I urge you to take advantage of this, and you'll be able to get to Warren right here on the page that you're listening to. But Warren, why don't you go ahead and give us your website so everyone can hear it and maybe jot it down?
Sure. The website is relatively straightforward. It's just www.warrenbroad.com. And I appreciate you mentioning that, Lorraine, because really the way that I work, especially with the clients that I'm working with directly, is it's about our connection. So one of the reasons that I offer that free introductory session is we need to be a match. Not every person that I speak to, we're not necessarily a match. But if we are a match, then I'm willing to go the long haul through their addiction with them or through their recovery with them. But it has to start out with that conversation. And if there's a genuine connection, whether it's the addiction or whether it's depression or anxiety, once that connection is created, we have something that we can work with.
Right, and it would be so wonderful for those of you out there that need help to know that you have somebody in your corner, someone that really understands what you're going through. And it's a very generous offer that you're making, Warren, and I appreciate it. And I know my audience appreciates it very much as well. I want to just talk for a moment about something that's in the news a lot lately, and that's sexual addiction. And many are saying that's not even a real addiction. What do you think?
Oh, it absolutely is an addiction. Although we would put that, I mean, if we want to get clinical with it, that's considered a compulsive behavior. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, we're in a situation where somebody is doing something over and over again, and that there's a shame and guilt cycle that exists in there, and that they feel powerless over it, that it's for whatever reason. See, The part of the brain that is activated during sexual activity is the same part of the brain that is activated from alcohol or from sugar.
Really?
We talked about that. Mm. It's this set part of the brain that is activated, and it's activated during sexual activity, whether that's actual activity with another person, or whether it's internet activity, or this part of the brain is heavily activated during sexual activity.
What part of the brain is that?
Well, there's dopamine receptors that are immediately put out. The same thing that happens when we with sugar. Uh-huh. There's also even more sort of primal parts of the brain that are activated. And we all know sexual activity is feels good,
right?
And it probably feels better in some ways than many of the synthetic chemicals that are out there that people are taking. So this generally always stems from something that is lacking in the person's life. So whether they're lonely or whether they're depressed or whether they're, there's something in there that during, whether it's watching porn or whether it's, hooking up with anonymous partners, things of that kind, that disappears.
The loneliness, just the same as that chocolate bar helps to alleviate that pain or that guilt or that depression for a moment.
Yeah.
For a moment.
Yeah.
So then you have to go back and do more because you're back in the cycle again.
Exactly. So
wow.
Yes, it is very real. There's no debate for anyone that really says that they don't agree that could be an addiction. Really needs to look at what the true definition of an addiction is.
Really?
Just because, I mean, that's just like saying...
Well, I think you're saying it's a cop-out that men use when they're caught screwing around on their wife or something. They're saying, hey, that's not really an addiction. They're just using that as an excuse because sometimes having an addiction gives you a pass. Well, I'll let you get away with it because you're addicted.
Right. And well, the reality is, and it's not nearly publicized in the same way it is for men, but, sexual addiction is equally apparent in women as it is in men.
Well, really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Statistically, it is, it's about a 50-50.
Are women as busy watching porn as we know men are?
No, women actually tend to be more into anonymous partners than porn.
So the lovely lady next door could be running around at night to sleazy bars and you just don't even know what's going on, right?
Well, and that's one of the things that's changed, Lorraine, is now she doesn't even need to go to a bar. There are,
internet connections.
Yeah.
Ah. Wow, you are opening my eyes to things I really didn't even know about.
Right.
Can a person switch their addiction? I mean, would it be better, say, if somebody's a family man or woman and they love their family and they're addicted, they've got a sexual addiction? Obviously, it would be better if they had a sugar addiction, for example, because they wouldn't be, bringing in something like venereal disease or, opening themselves up to a harmful, somebody mm-hmm. hurting them. Can they switch their addiction?
Well, addictions do often get switched. It's one of the things that I pay a lot of attention to with my clients. Once they're generally past about the six months to a year, this is often when we see the mind starting to look for a new option. Because once the wiring is kind of in there of addiction and addictive behavior, that wiring can very, very easily transfer to another source. And we see this a lot actually with cocaine, is that a lot of individuals can get off cocaine, but they can't get off alcohol because it goes from cocaine now to alcohol.
That's interesting because cocaine kind of makes you high and up from what I hear, and alcohol kind of mellows you out and brings you down, right?
Yeah.
A different sort of a feeling.
Yeah, the high is definitely different, but the behavior is the same, and we see this happen a lot also with like things like shopping. They're not getting drunk anymore, but they're compulsively shopping. They're looking to fill a void, and this is a big part of the work that I do. You have to find things that can fill the void that don't begin to create shame or guilt.
Right.
Is that, you know, if I'm addicted to meditating, I don't have any guilt or shame about that.
Right. Right. You should have some pride in that. That's true. You know, so much of what I talk about is appreciation, and you have to relearn to walk outside and appreciate the sky and the flowers and the trees, and that is available to most of us, the smile of a child or the giggle or your sweet dog meeting you at the door. When I think when you start developing a huge amount of gratitude for those simple things, that would probably help a great deal when it came to addiction as one of the tools.
For sure. That is a big part of recovery in the now, is doing active gratitude, doing constantly paying attention to mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, am I in a mindset of lack, or am I in a mindset of abundance?
And which is really simply changing your viewpoint, is it not? I mean, the same person can feel lacking and nothing really changes, but their point of view, and they can go into feeling abundant.
Yes.
Nothing has actually changed other than the way they're seeing their life. Isn't that the truth?
It is the truth. And I believe this is where the recovery model does need to progress a little bit. Because sometimes with a straight 12-step approach, is very much based in a mindset of lack and of what they aren't anymore. And I believe that it's important that there's a strong component in almost everyone's recovery of abundance, what they're moving towards, what they now have instead of what they don't have. Mm-hmm. Especially in early stages of recovery, the mind can be massively obsessed with not having what it used to have, because we have removed something, something that the mind was very attached to. And that is part of recovery in the now, is we spend a lot of time on mindset. And mindset is, I believe, really the big factor that decides whether somebody is going to get long-term recovery or whether they're going to be stuck in short-term recovery. With long-term recovery, we see a real shift that exists over long periods of time where the addict isn't stuck in the mindset of lack any longer, and now they're seeing the benefits of a life outside of their addiction.
Mm. So in other words, they're like paying more attention to appreciating what is available to them rather than putting as much attention on what they need, what they think they need. Is that sort of it?
Absolutely. There's a term that's used a lot in recovery houses, which is the dry drunk. Mm. And, you know, a dry drunk is an alcoholic who's stopped drinking, but they're still an alcoholic. Is if your mindset hasn't changed, if you haven't moved to a higher level of recovery, a higher level of responsibility in your life, you might as well still be, I shouldn't say this, it sounds a little crass, but in some ways you might as well still be drinking, because you haven't achieved any kind of real level of recovery or change in your life. If everything in your life is the same, the only thing that's changed is that you're not drinking, then you really haven't addressed what true recovery is. And it is often the same thing with eating disorders and every other addiction or compulsive behavior, is if you don't change the root of what was causing it, there's not a lot of point in really even trying.
You know, an interesting thing that I teach, and I know people that I've known that have gone to recovery types of programs, is they're supposed to find the gratitude in the addiction, in having had the addiction. And I think what you're saying and what I say is that within the problem, there is something more beautiful that you can glean from it, that you can grow, something greater that you can find. And if we can look at even something as difficult as addiction and try to find the gift, and there is a gift in the recovery, and as you just said, there's a greater way to live, then it becomes a good thing. You can find the silver lining.
Yeah, and sometimes that silver lining really isn't all that far away. Mm. It is just that shift of mindset, that when the individual stops thinking about everything that they've lost and everything that they can't now do that they used to do, mm-hmm. and begin looking at what's now available, it is once those blinders have been taken off, the recovery is a massive gift.
You know, I do you that those really were words of wisdom, and we're just about at the end of the show today. But do you want to leave the audience with anything else that they can take away during this time of year?
Well, I think the biggest thing of this time of year is keeping everything in perspective and understanding that it isn't a long-term thing. December doesn't run 365 days, and the holiday season does end, and the challenges that exist are temporary, but also that December is a wonderful month to start looking at what you want January to be and what you want your new year to be, not emphasizing New Year's Eve, but the change that can occur. This is a beautiful time of year to really look at what now is available.
A new beginning, a new beginning. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much. You're so wise. I have enjoyed you. I am sure that so many of the listeners have gotten something they can take away. And I want all of you to remember that Warren is offering you a free session and also a free meditation. So just go ahead. You're going to find the link right here on this page. And, you know, I know that you want to be happy and enjoy peace of mind. And I promise you, you can be happy and you can begin to enjoy all the things that you want in life, and you deserve it. You should feel confident and secure and happy. And you've gotten a lot of very valuable information today that will help you to make happiness practices simple. But to make these practices stick and make them work for you, you must have a calm and peaceful mind. And because of that, I want to give you a free guided meditation that will bring you into a place of peaceful clarity. And that's really the only place that you can choose happiness. A quiet, peaceful mind has access to higher wisdom and inspiration. So go ahead and click on the link that says Lorraine's Gifts. Or you can subscribe at LorraineGordon.com. And once you're on that page, you can also ask for and receive a free 25-minute consultation with me so that you can find out a little bit more about what coaching is like, and I can get to know you and see how I can be of service to you. And I want you to fill your days up with uplifting and inspirational information. That is how to have a great and happy life, I promise you. So please do something else. Add to your happiness by helping others to get inspiration to your comments right here on the bottom of the page. Help others to listen to something that could possibly change their life. So please go ahead and forward this show to anyone you know who may be having problems this time of the year or needing help with addiction. You could change or even save a life. This is Lorraine Gordon. I'm your online coach. I see you having your best life, and you need to see it too and make it a reality. I'll be back with you next week. Same time, same place. Namaste, and bye for now.
You've been listening to Happiness First, The Rest Will Follow with Lorraine Gordon. Because I'm happy. She'll be back next week with another great show. And to learn more about Happiness First, visit LorraineGordon.com. That's LorraineGordon.com. Be sure to subscribe and receive some fantastic free gifts. Lorraine wants to bring you more of what you want, so please make a comment on the show page here. Or you can email her at Lorraine@LorraineGordon.com. And thank you for listening.